No one who has not read Aristophanes can know the Athenians. Will Durant, from his book about civilization, The Life of Greece. Hello and welcome to the Western Traditions Podcast. My name is Rob Paxton, and this is the 30th episode of The Greek Sun, a podcast series about the history and culture of ancient Greece. Today's episode focuses on the life and work of Aristophanes, an Athenian playwright who lived through the disastrous Peloponnesian War and who knew some of the greatest men of Greek history, such as Pericles, Cleon, Alcibiades, and Socrates. Knew them well enough to mock them publicly and, for the most part, get away with it. This will be the last episode about Greek drama, even though plays, both tragic and comic, will continue to be staged in the Greek world and the art of drama will continue to evolve. However, these plays that I've mentioned in the first three episodes of Greek drama are all referenced later on in the series about the Middle Ages and other series. Now, before we move on, please remember to check out the website western-traditions.org, where I keep source lists, transcripts, helpful pictures, and maps and links to some good books to read. You can also buy Western Traditions merchandise on the shopping page or contribute directly to the podcast through the PayPal or Patreon options. Aristophanes was born in the middle of the 5th century BC. Depending on your source, you might find a birth date of 450 BC or perhaps a few years later. Regardless, he would have been just coming to young manhood when the Peloponnesian War broke out. He started writing plays just a few years after the war began, and his work would essentially chronicle the war from a comic perspective. Aristophanes wrote comedies, which were still something of an innovation at this time in Greece. By innovation, I mean that we have to remember that the traditional presentation of the plays, which I described in my first episode on Greek drama, these typically were at festivals. These plays were presented in trilogies. All of them, previously, were tragedies. And they were followed by a fourth satyr play, which was usually a play full of comic sketches, renowned for their frank and even gross humor with lots of references to sex and other bodily functions. But some decades before the birth of Aristophanes, comic plays began to hold their own on stage, that is, to become the focus of the author's efforts and the audience's attention, and not just serving as an afterthought to tragedy. Comedies acquired their own special place in the Dionysian Festival in Athens. A specific day was set aside during the festivities just for comedic plays, and they were even presented in groups of three or four, as tragedies had always been presented. Now, however comedy may have developed in other parts of the Greek world, in democratic Athens, comedy quickly became a vehicle for political satire. Now, it is typical today to think of comedy as something more associated with liberal politics or left-wing politics and such. Interestingly, in the Athens of the 5th century BC, comedy was more often than not anti-democratic and more associated with the aristocracy. Some reasons have been given for this association with the aristocracy, such as the fact that comic writers needed funding, and it was the aristocrats who had the money, so the plays more often reflected an aristocratic viewpoint. But there's something overly simplistic about that portrayal. We also know that the aristocrats, Aristophanes in particular, they despised the rising merchant class, which was also wealthy. So, however scholars may explain this, it doesn't really make sense that only the aristocrats had money. In fact, during the war, when Aristophanes wrote most of his plays, the aristocrats probably would have been kind of hard up financially, compared to their normal anyway, with their country estates in flames while they sheltered in the city with the common people. Another good explanation of the apparent conservatism of the comic playwrights is simply that most comedies in Athens, being political satire, and the democrats being the ones in power at the time, it was only natural that the plays would mostly poke fun at democratic ideas. Furthermore, men who were engaged in labor or in commerce probably would not have time to write and produce plays, even if they had the money. So it's likely that the only people of aristocratic background, like Aristophanes, would have much opportunity to compose plays, and thus they would be naturally more likely to favor aristocratic ideals. With this aristocratic bent, the plays of Aristophanes often focused on the latest radical ideas in society, such as the rise of rationalistic philosophy or the idea of the emancipation of women, and these topics received their fair share of humiliation in his comic plays. Now, after the death of Pericles in 429 BC, democratic leadership was taken by Cleon, the wealthy owner of a tanning business in Athens, and tanning here does not refer to suntans, by the way, but it refers to the processing of animal hides into leather and other useful products. It would have been a major industry in this era. And this was just when Aristophanes first started writing, so Cleon would be put under the microscope for several years by comic dramatists like Aristophanes until that statesman died in the war just before the Peace of Nicias in 421 BC. Now, Aristophanes' own preference for the aristocracy can be explained by his own background story. He was born into a wealthy landed family. When the war, provoked as he saw it by the Democrats, when the Peloponnesian War came, the playwright had to move to the city with his family and leave their estate in the country behind to be ravaged by raiding Spartans and their allies. And Aristophanes was not happy living in the city among the teeming masses. Nor did he like being called upon to suddenly hate Spartans, Corinthians, and others simply out of jingoistic fervor. So Aristophanes' plays frequently call for peace and for an end to war among the Greeks. Really, most of Aristophanes' plays can be seen as a sort of comic chronicle of the war, heaping, as they typically do, ridicule on the various prominent political and cultural figures and ideas that became popular during the conflict. Now, the type of comedy employed in most of Aristophanes' plays is known as old comedy. Old comedy was usually political satire that relied, more than anything, on the unnuanced use of sexual innuendo and gross bodily humor. Yes, there are a lot of fart jokes and poop jokes in Aristophanes' plays. Old comedy really just simply represents the comedic fashions which were then newly developing out of the old satire plays, which had always been outrageously gross, frankly sexual, and full of buffoonery. Aristophanes and his comic colleagues also did something that we now know as breaking the fourth wall, where the actors not only speak directly to the audience, but make reference to the play itself within the play, and they make commentary about how is this show going and why people should or shouldn't laugh. They basically engage in humor directly with the audience. And when you read all this, it occurs to you that a lot of things that we think as daring and innovative in entertainment today are really just thousands of years old. In fact, in The Wasps, one of Aristophanes' plays that came out in 422 BC, when the war was now already some 9 years old, the chorus of the play turns to the crowd and tells them these words about Aristophanes, the poet of the play. Quote, "If you ever stop letting yourselves be deceived by strangers and seduced with flattery, if you ever stop being fools in politics, it will be because of him. In cautioning you against these tricks, the poet has done you great service." This was not the only time that Aristophanes would direct his cast, particularly the chorus, to praise himself and his politics during one of his plays. Now, over the course of Aristophanes' life and career, Greek comedy would begin to transition into something that scholars call middle comedy, and decades after his death, during the time of Alexander the Great, middle comedy would give way to what is now called new comedy. The nuances of these genres of comedy are beyond the scope of this podcast, but it is worth noting that Greek comedy became less personal and less grotesque and ridiculous over time. Poets moved away from mocking specific personages in public life and began creating stereotypes, humorous stereotypes, in imaginary but real-world situations. They developed stereotypes such as the tyrannical father, the young lovers, kind-hearted, wise prostitutes, parasitical friends, and so on, and they used these imaginary characters in their plays without necessarily having any reference to current events. But we are focused on Aristophanes' plays today, though, and as you will see later in this episode, in the breakdown of his play known as The Clouds, Aristophanes' humor is always quite pointed and personal. There are only 11 manuscripts of Aristophanes' stage works surviving today, though he probably wrote several scores of plays, maybe even more. In general, you will recognize plays that belong to Aristophanes, rather than Euripides or Sophocles, for instance, by the simple form and similar format of the titles. For instance, The Wasps, The Clouds, The Knights, The Birds, The Peace, and so on. I mentioned in the previous segment that Aristophanes was what we would probably call a conservative today, although we should be very cautious when trying to apply our modern political dichotomy to the politics of our ancient ancestors. But still, there is no doubt from the works of Aristophanes that remain that the man was on the side of tradition, or at least opposed to the latest changes and fads that were appearing in Athenian society. Will Durant, the historian, in his Life of Greece, perhaps says it best. Aristophanes distrusted the skepticism of the sophists, the individualism that was undermining the state, the sentimental feminism that was agitating the women, and the socialism that was arousing the slaves. End quote. Again, I think that this might be difficult for modern listeners to grasp how a comedian was such an arch conservative, because we associate comedy today in the early 21st century typically with political liberalism. But this just goes to show that our ancestors were very different from us, very different, as were their societies, their habits, and their views. It's usually a mistake to try to align them with our own political parties and our own social experiments. In particular, Aristophanes was offended by the work of Euripides, one of the poets we studied in the second episode on Greek drama. This is shocking, really, because Euripides is probably the most well-remembered of the Greek dramatists whose works were preserved and copied more than any other. While we see plays of Euripides as fascinating and insightful with regard to Greek myth and culture, these plays were apparently also manifestations of certain social developments, developments which the aristocratic Aristophanes was none too pleased with. Aristophanes was also vocal in recognizing that the war with the Spartans and their allies was at least a part of this problem, if not the cause of all these changes in morals and beliefs. And I've mentioned it before, and I will adhere to this idea consistently in this podcast throughout all the series, and I'll show examples of it again and again in history, that war always brings unwanted change into a society, and it's almost always better avoided. Now, Aristophanes was an advocate for peace from the very beginning, and in one of his plays, aptly titled The Peace, he highlights the damage that the war has done to society, and he heralds the Peace of Nicias, to which the title of the play refers. He touts this peace treaty as beneficial to the more fundamental members of Athenian society, such as the farmers, and as detrimental to the merchants, who had profited instead from the conflict, as businesses always do. Even over 2,000 years ago, we can see the similarity with our own society, in which the moneyed interests always benefit from staging wars, while the working people die in battle or lose their livelihood and their savings as collateral damage from these conflicts. In particular, in that play, Aristophanes takes aim at Cleon, the Athenian politician and warmonger who had taken the reins of government after the death of Pericles. Now, in one of his much later plays, called Ecclusiae Sousae, or The Assembly Women, Aristophanes lampoons the women's movement. In the play, a group of women disguise themselves as men and appear in the governing assembly and vote themselves to be rulers over the city. They immediately institute an economic communism among the citizens and distribute the wealth of all among the total number of citizens. Notably, the slaves are not freed, nor are they given any of this wealth. But the women in the play also vote for a provocative sexual equality, that is, an equal share of sexual activity, so that the old and unattractive women can legally demand and enforce sex with men of their choice. The play ends with two young lovers being separated by an angry older woman who is demanding sex with the young man. In general, Aristophanes is pretty dismissive of all the usual utopian rhetoric that typically comes from radical movements, whether it is for economic, political, or even sexual communism. He trusts rather in the traditional binary roles of aristocrats and commoners, men and women, citizens and slaves, to keep order in society, and he sees agitation for change as the primary cause of disorder and suffering. It is interesting in Aristophanes' plays in particular to see the obvious sign of conflict in Athenian society about the roles of the sexes, because we really do not see many signs of this issue in the work of other writers. For example, we have already heard Pericles' funeral speech in which he encourages wives to keep their mouths shut because the best wife is one nobody talks about, according to him. Doesn't sound like a keynote speaker for the women's movement. And Aristophanes is particularly upset with rationalists like Socrates and Plato, for example, but in the writings of Plato, we do not see any of this conflict about gender roles that we hear about in Aristophanes' plays, or we don't even see any encouragement at all of women in Plato's dialogues. In fact, as we will see in the episode about Plato's Republic, one of his longer dialogues, Plato openly advocates for a communism of women, essentially keeping all women as sexually available to all male citizens who are otherwise busy running the utopian society that he imagines in the dialogue. And this is hardly a suffragette notion. Perhaps the women's movement was just short-lived and already forgotten by the time that Plato began to write his dialogues, many years after the war and after the death of Socrates. But regardless, in his play known as The Clouds, Aristophanes will turn his attention toward Socrates and ferociously ridicule that man, and really the ideas of all the rationalistic philosophers. The Clouds was one of the earlier plays of Aristophanes. First written and produced probably in the year 423 BC, it is of particular interest to this podcast due to its inclusion of Socrates amongst the player characters of the play. Now, in the play, Socrates is portrayed as someone who is already famous in society and as a philosopher. This is revealing because it means that Socrates and his political contributions were already well known by the mid-420s BC, some 25 years before his trial and execution. The play, briefly, primarily concerns a middle-aged man named Strepsiades, who finds himself deeply in debt, partly due to the shiftlessness of his grown son. He decides that he must become a great speaker so that he may take his creditors to court and reduce or nullify what he owes them. Naturally, in need of oratorical training, Strepsiades goes to the school of the Sophists. I mentioned in a previous episode about Socrates that one of the goals of the Sophists was to train men how to think logically, how to speak convincingly on any manner of subjects, and how to win arguments in court. And to do this, of course, they would teach you this, of course, in return for money. Now, after Strepsiades enters the school, he first meets Socrates when the famous philosopher appears on stage in a basket hanging from the ceiling by a rope. Stage notes in the play actually indicate that some machine swings the basket into view from off stage. When hailed by Strepsiades, the first words of the actor playing Socrates on the stage, his first words from his lofty basket perch are the following: "Mortal, why do you call my name?" When Strepsiades asks what Socrates is doing, the lofty philosopher replies, "I walk on air and contemplate the sun." The satire is heavy here. Aristophanes portrays all sophists, Socrates in particular, as men full of themselves. But they're also portrayed as con men, essentially. In the era of the Peloponnesian War, philosophers are the scammers, the multi-level marketing guys, the TV preachers, the social media influencers, out to make a quick buck off the gullible and the vulnerable. As the play goes on, Socrates engages in a lot of digressions about nonsensical matters, such as the distance a flea might jump. And he also denies the existence of the traditional gods, instead insisting that the clouds must be worshipped. And remember, when we get to the dialogues of Plato, that Socrates will be accused, again, of this idea of denying the existence of the gods. Now, you can see here the root, also, of the modern saying, with Socrates being on that in that basket held above the stage and talking about the clouds. There's the root here of that saying about someone's head being up in the clouds, that is, ignoring the important down-to-earth realities and problems and focusing on irrelevant inanities. Socrates floats around his school in his basket and considers solutions to problems that really do not exist, while the war rages on and masses of people are uprooted, and those that do not die in combat endure hunger and suffer from diseases such as the plague that struck Athens multiple times. And while admirers of Socrates, like myself, may protest this strange cult-like description of the man's followers in the play, we should remember that this was and always has been a characteristic of such movements of new philosophies. Yes, Aristophanes is mocking Socrates' following here, but his mockery is probably based off of real activities and the public presentations of those followers. Maybe they all were a little weird. Consider the Pythagoreans, we've already studied, who had their own very specific way of life, special clothing and diet, levels of initiation and secrecy, and so on. Now, it doesn't please me to think of Socrates' followers actually behaving in these bizarre ways, because I just want to admire the pure philosophy and rationality of the man's words, but chances are that Socrates' following, like any following, and I'm trying very hard here to avoid the word cult, they probably had certain idiosyncratic tendencies and probably came off as bizarre to outsiders. But back to the play. Aristophanes does not miss the chance to have the chorus address the crowd directly here and praise the poet for his cleverness and his courage in mocking Cleon, the statesman who has led the war effort. But for all its pointed political messaging, the play remains a comical farce aimed at Socrates, and it includes a true satyr play moment in which Strepsiades, concealed under a blanket, masturbates on stage, just to give you an idea of how far these comedies would go. In this, we can see that some of the lengths to which modern entertainment can go, they're really not all that new and not all that audacious. People have been making sex jokes and fart jokes since time immemorial, apparently. Anyway, the outcome of the whole affair is that Strepsiades is finally able to get his son to enter Socrates' school in the play, and there the son learns the basics of sophistry and argument. He then comes home and beats his own father while explaining how he is justified in doing so using his new philosophical learning. And I can't help but notice the similarity here between the son in the play justifying himself in beating his father and the situation in Plato's dialogue Euthyphro. In that dialogue, Socrates encounters a young man on his way to prosecute his own father for murder. Was this choice of scenarios in the dialogue a reference to this play from decades before? After all, in the following dialogue of Plato, the Apology, Socrates references how playwrights long ago had slandered him and how they were partly responsible for his present bad name among the Athenians. The possible connection here is probably a great topic for deeper thought and a writing project for students of the podcast curriculum. Anyway, Strepsiades, having suffered a humiliating beating at the hands of his own son in the play, has now had enough. He rallies his slaves, gives them torches, and they head off to burn down Socrates' school. And the play comes to an end. Now, just based on the play, one might assume that Aristophanes was a personal enemy of Socrates. Certainly, the man was no fan of the social and political views associated with Socrates at this time, anyway. However, there are also accounts that Socrates loved the work of Aristophanes and himself attended the play and enjoyed it. Yet, once again, in Plato's dialogue, The Apology, the philosopher seems to suggest that plays like this one are partly responsible for the public perception of Socrates, which led to his condemnation and execution. There's really just no getting to the bottom of the matter at this remote time, no opportunity to understand just how these two men were connected. Were they friends or foes or something else? Most likely, political and social alliances shifted back and forth during these many long years of the war, as they always do in every time and place. And it's very possible that Socrates and Aristophanes may have been on and off allies or friends. Possibly also, Socrates may have simply appreciated the plays because, as the saying goes, in certain lines of work, there is no bad publicity. Whatever keeps you in the public eye, after all, is good for business. But this play also confounds the matter of Socrates in another way. And this is important. The man portrayed here in the play, even when you rip away all the humor, he doesn't sound like the Socrates that we encounter in Plato's dialogue. He seems much more like the pre-Socratic philosophers. He's focused on physical and metaphysical matters, the nature of the sun and the clouds and of the gods. Even this matter of the distance fleas might jump, even though it's a humorous caricature, this debate still reveals a man who is focused on the older arguments about the substance and nature of things, of the physical world, and not focused on the dialectic and the ethics which we normally associate with Socrates. Is this portrayal of Socrates revealing an earlier, younger version of the man, more interested in older philosophical ideas? And thus, the dialogues of Plato, not to be written until three decades later, do they simply portray a different stage of Socrates' thought? Or is the play just evidence of Aristophanes' ignorance of philosophy, and perhaps it just displays a misunderstanding of what Socrates was really all about? We will most likely never know the answer. Probably Socrates, like all of us, evolved as he grew and rode the same pendulum most of us do between radical and conservative throughout the course of his life. We know few details about the death of Aristophanes. He died sometime around 386 BC, having survived decades of wars and revolutions. There is no evidence that his death was anything other than age-related. He would have been about 60. We do not know if he was ever a soldier or a politician, though there is a mention of him being at least briefly among the 500, the Assembly of Athens, but this was an honor passed around so that all adult male citizens would eventually serve on that decision-making body. It would make sense that he would have served in the field, even in combat sometimes, since Athens was pressed numerous times in the war to field an army that utilized its entire citizenry, and even Socrates fought in the war, but we have no hard evidence of this. Now, Aristophanes would continue writing right up until his death. He apparently completed a play called The Wealth the year before his death, but the play is not among those that survived. But according to the testimony of other writers about his later plays, these stage works were beginning to display some of the theatrical evolution that was occurring in Greek comedy, such as the reduction in the importance of the chorus, or even the removal of the chorus. The chorus, remember, had been the only speaking role in the very earliest religious plays back in the 7th century BC. So Aristophanes, whom I have depicted as a traditionalist, was rolling with the changes artistically as he got older. The historian Will Durant probably best sums up the man with the following quote: "Aristophanes is an unclassifiable mixture of beauty, wisdom, and filth. When the mood is upon him, he can write lyrics of the purest Greek serene, which no translator has ever yet conveyed. His dialogue is life itself. Or perhaps it is swifter, racier, more vigorous than life dares to be." End quote. But Durant also goes on and says this about Aristophanes: "His plots are ridiculous and are put together with an almost extempore carelessness. The humor is of low order and too often depends upon digestion, reproduction, and excretion. Coming to him after any other Greek author, he seems depressingly vulgar." End quote. I myself would describe Aristophanes with just these words: he was an Athenian. Truthfully, I find it comforting that it is so hard to pigeonhole men like Aristophanes or Socrates as a radical or a conservative, an aristocrat or a democrat, a philosopher or a realist. Life is hard enough without having to stick to your guns for one single philosophy or belief system the entire time. Maybe it's the ones who can't change gears, like the fanatical warmongering Cleon, who took his whole society to the brink of collapse. Maybe these are the ones we should be worried about. I think Aristophanes would probably agree. Until next time, I thank you for listening to the Western Traditions Podcast.